58. Have people well observed just how much a genuinely religious life, both its favourite task of microscopic self-examination and that tender calmness which is called prayer and is a constant preparedness for the coming of God, requires an outward leisure or half-leisure? I mean leisure with a good conscience, from time immemorial, from blood, to which the aristocratic feeling that work is dishonourable is not entirely foreign. That is, the feeling that work makes the soul and body coarse. And thus, as a result, the modern blaring, time-consuming industriousness, so proud of itself, stupidly proud, trains and prepares people precisely for unbelief more than for anything else. Among those now living, for example, in Germany, who keep religion at a distance, I find people who hold to free thinking of various kinds and origins, but above all a majority of them whose industriousness, from generation to generation, has dissolved the religious instincts, so that they have no idea any more what purpose religions serve, and take note of their presence in the world with, as it were, only a kind of indifferent wonder. They already feel that generous demands are made of them, these good people, whether from their businesses or from their pleasures, to say nothing of the fatherland and the newspapers and obligations to the family. It seems that they have no time left over for religion. It is especially unclear to them whether religion involves a new business or a new pleasure, for it's not possible, they tell themselves, that people go to church merely to spoil their own good moods. They are no enemies of religious customs. If in certain circumstances people demand of them participation in such traditions, something required by the state, for example, they do what people require, just the way people do so many things, with a patient and modest seriousness, and without much curiosity and concern. They just live too much apart and on the outside to find it necessary in such cases to conduct an argument with themselves for or against the matter. Among these indifferent people today belongs the majority of German Protestants in the middle classes, especially in the great industrious centres of trade and traffic, including most of the industrious scholars and all the accessories of the university, with the exception of the theologians, whose existence and possibility there constantly provide the psychologist with more and ever more sophisticated riddles to sort out. From the viewpoint of the devout or merely church-going people, we rarely imagine how much goodwill, one could say how much arbitrary will, is involved nowadays when a German scholar takes the problem of religion seriously. On the basis of his whole trade, and, as mentioned, on the basis of the industriousness of the tradesman which his modern conscience requires of him, he inclines to a supercilious, almost kindly amusement towards religion, mixed now and then with a slight contempt for the uncleanliness of the spirit which he assumes is present wherever people still profess their faith in the church. The scholar succeeds only with the help of history, hence not from his own personal experience, in bringing to religion a reverent seriousness and a certain timid consideration. But even if his feelings about religion have managed to rise all the way to gratitude towards it, in his own person he hasn't yet come a step closer to what still constitutes church and piety. Perhaps the reverse is the case. The practical indifference about religious matters in which he was born and raised tends to sublimate itself in him to caution and cleanliness, things which avoid contact with religious men and things. And it could well be the very depth of his tolerance and humanity which tells him to stay out of the way of complex emergencies which tolerance brings with it. Every period has its own divine form of naivety whose invention other ages may envy. And how much naivety, respectful, childish, and boundlessly foolish naivety lies in this belief of the scholar in his own superiority, in the good conscience of his toleration, in the unsuspecting, unsophisticated certainty with which his instinct treats the religious man as a less worthy and lower type, above whom he himself has grown up, out, and away from, the scholar, the small, presumptuous dwarf and member of the rabble, the diligent and nimble head-and-hand worker of ideas, modern ideas. 59. Whoever has looked deep into the world will readily guess what wisdom exists in the fact that men are superficial. It is their preserving instinct which teaches them to be changeable, light, and false. Here and there we find a passionate and exaggerated adoration of pure forms, among philosophers as well as among artists. No one should doubt that whoever requires the cult of surfaces that much has at some time or another grasped beneath those surfaces with unhappy results. Perhaps with respect to these scorched children, the born artists, who still find the good things of life only in the intention to falsify its image, as it were in a prolonged revenge against life, there is even a rank ordering. We could derive the degree to which life has been spoiled for them by the extent to which they wish to see its image falsified, diluted, transcended, deified. Among the artists, we could count the homines religiosi, men of religion, as their highest rank. It is the deep, suspicious fear of an incurable pessimism which compels entire millennia to sink their teeth into a religious interpretation of existence. The fear of that instinct which has a premonition that people could grasp the truth too early, before man has become strong enough, hard enough, artistic enough. From this point of view, piety, the life in God, could appear as the most refined and final spawn of the fear of truth, as an artist's worship and intoxication in the face of the most logical of all falsifications, as the will to the reversal of the truth, to untruth at any price. Perhaps up to this point there has been no stronger means to make human beings themselves look more beautiful than this very piety. Through it the human being can become so much art, surface, play of colours and goodness, that one no longer suffers at the sight of him.